I'm Bernard, and I am a recovering alcoholic and grateful for it. I didn't, new beginnings is what tus nua means, and I could be butchering that word. There are plenty of new beginnings that I experienced in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to give you first start with a little history of Alcoholics Anonymous before I talk about my history as an alcoholic. One thing that's very important to those who, maybe call themselves an agnostic or an atheist is there was an atheist who was one of the first. By the way, Bill was a little bit of a Wall Street promotional guy. He was kind of a flim-flam artist, if you will. And so you may have heard there were 100 members. In the beginning, there weren't. There were 76. He rounded it up. There was one woman. And one of the members was an atheist, and he remained an atheist sober. And his name was Jim Burwell. I can tell you his full name because he's passed away, as they've all 76 are now, since it was the 1930s. And he's the man who inserted the words God as we understand him. Now, I don't know, for most free thinking individuals, the minute you hear him, for me, I immediately evoke images of some kind of anthropocentric deity, which is kind of the opposite of a free thinker. Free thinker or somebody who believes or doesn't believe in anything or searching for something is probably not looking for some kind of deity. I know I'm not. And have have been clean and sober. I do, by the way, fall prey to alcoholism in all of its forms. I'm not a specialist. I partook of everything that altered me from the neck up. I seem to have an allergy to it, a physical allergy. As soon as I take anything that alters me from the neck up, all bets are off. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how many I'm going to take, and I don't know where I'm going to end up, which actually ended up in a jail cell in the beginning of my sobriety. But not to digress from a little bit of history, Bill's feeling about who should be members of Alcoholics and not it became kind of progressive as time went on. By the time 1965, the 30th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous, he had a little speech that said, "Newcomers are approaching AA at the rate of thousands yearly. They represent almost every belief and attitude imaginable. We have atheists and agnostics. We have people of nearly every race, culture, and religion. In AA, we are supposed to be bound together in the kinship of our common suffering. Consequently, the full individual liberty to practice," and this is Bill Wilson speaking, by the way, "consequently, the full individual liberty to practice any creed, principle, or therapy, whatever, should be a first consideration for us all. Let us not, therefore, pressure anyone with our individual or even our collective views. Let us instead accord each other the respect and love that is due to every human being as he tries to make his way toward the light." Well, I don't know about the light or the dark, what would be more spiritual, but whatever. "Let us always be inclusive rather than exclusive. Let us remember that each alcoholic among us is a member of AA, so long as he or she so declares." And he said that to the convention, which was around April in 1965. It was later republished in the Grapevine of July 1965, that passage. So Bill had a kind of a progressive view as time went on. you know, some of you may have heard he even tried LSD at some point in the 50s and the 60s before it became a hot button issue. And he convinced a lot of early members of Alcoholics Anonymous to trip with him. So he was a seeker throughout his sobriety. And he was kind of progressive as to who should and should not call themselves a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was kind of vocal about it, as you could see. And that really is the legacy of Alcoholics Anonymous. No matter what somebody tells you in a particular meeting, you do not have to believe in any kind of anthropomorphic or any other kind of higher power in order to get and stay clean and sober. That is the main message of the third step, really. The third tradition, really. The third step is a whole different idea. That and as an atheist / agnostic, I've been able to work all 12 steps. That means 2 and 3 and 11, and come to a belief system. I no longer call myself an atheist or agnostic. I don't call myself anything. I call myself a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a belief system, and frankly, I think our personal belief systems, our personal creed, how we believe about what a free thinker means, what a humanist means, what an atheist or agnostic means, is a personal issue as any belief system, and I think it should stay personal. I don't think that a collective view is what's appropriate for anyone's recovery. I have a personal practice that works quite well for me, but isn't got nothing really to do with me staying clean and sober. Absolutely, it has somewhat to do with me being centered, me being able to talk freely and not be so concerned with what you may think or not think. And talk about my own experience, strength, and hope. How long do I speak? Clifford? How long do I speak? Anyone?
Well, you got another 20 minutes. You're good.
Okay, let's see.
Yeah. Just go for it, Bernard. Go for it.
I'm gonna do that, but I'm still gonna time myself because I don't like having that faux pas of over talking because I can. Anyway, So back to me, so generally, whatever you believe, relax. Your life is not dependent, and your sobriety is not dependent on what you believe or don't believe. And being open to changing your beliefs is not so dependent on Alcoholics Anonymous either. Just recognizing that if you're here, you probably are not coming in on a winning streak. You probably realize there's some kind of problem with some kind of substance. And that's what we're here for. That's the glue that holds us together. If you're anything like me, I lost the power of choice over what I would didn't take that would alter me from the neck up. And having lost the power of choice over that, it was kind of the main obsession of my life. I spent most of my life being altered, if you will. Although I thought I was a functioning alcoholic. I probably thought I was. It was the 1980s, so it really didn't matter. The work that I did probably looked artistic to some people who were paying me for that work. So, I managed to escape by convincing myself that I was functioning just by being altered every day of my life. Some part of me in there knew that this wasn't working out too well, especially because I would always end up offending someone sometime at some point in my behavior. You know, I still do that, but at least I'm aware of it. That didn't just go away. Because if you haven't already realized, I'm kind of opinionated, and I have strong opinions, and sometimes that rubs people the wrong way. So be it. So I grew up in Detroit, Michigan, not all that far from Windsor, just across the little bridge there. And for those of you that are from Montreal, I'm not all that far from where you live. And I grew up in the in the 60s, and a lot was going on, and a lot was going on inside my family of origin. And I think that my father was probably one of us, but he never got to Alcoholics Anonymous, so I cannot call him an alcoholic. But he seemed to have a lot of problems with rage and alcohol. And so that affected me quite a bit. And I was looking for relief when I had my first experience with altering myself from the neck up. And like I said, when I speak about alcoholism, I'm not being a specialist. It doesn't matter what substance I'm talking about. I don't think there's a lot of difference for me as an alcoholic in any substance I took. I took it all the same way, and it kept me mostly from feeling my most authentic self and having a new beginning. It was sort of a an armor, as opposed to having a new beginning with life and with those around me and my fellow human beings. It was more of an armor that became more like an Iron Maiden. And trapped me. By the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was behind being arrested in a blackout. I was trying to get off cocaine by drinking. Didn't work out too well. Made my behavior even crazier, and usually I ended up at the dealer anyway. So, I knew that at some point, I wasn't completely divorced from my logic. I knew that at some point that I had to kind of quit anything that altered me from the neck up in order to make this thing work. I knew that my job was tenuous, and indeed, I was fired the week jail experience happened. I was fired. My father passed away, and found out about unfaithfulness from a partner, all in 1 week. And I was off on a bender. I was ingesting everything that I possibly could. And I ended up in a blackout trying to, if I were a man of color, I would have been just shot. But instead, I was arrested. And I ended up awakening in this jail cell, and the cops telling me what I had done to my horror. And it was in that jail cell when after they told me what had happened and what I was in there for, that I sat there alone in the jail cell, and I pleaded out to whatever powers were in the universe to please help me. Now, I don't know about any kind of anthropomorphic, any kind of deity or any kind of power in the universe, but it occurred to me that it might be a good idea to go back to those Alcoholics Anonymous meetings that had kept me clean and sober for about 29 days a few months before. So I set about doing just that. I went to meetings, since I was now under new employee at a different facility in my industry. I had a lot of time on my hands because I had I'd screwed up my clientele quite a bit. So so I was able to attend a lot of meetings, and particularly the meetings that appealed to me the most were the midnight meetings, because they were all out of control, and there wasn't any, there wasn't a hell of a lot of God talk, and there wasn't a hell of a lot of what seemed to be dogmatic rhetoric, which was going on in some of the earlier meetings. And, you know, I related to it because it kind of seemed like a kind of sober club atmosphere at this particular place called the Drug and Alcohol Center on Santa Monica Boulevard. Its original location, it was on Santa Monica Boulevard a few years after that at another location, but this one was above a gay bar called The Rage, and so I would go there at midnight every night and just not drink, try to stay there till the bars closed, then go home, go to sleep, and wake up and go to my work and repeat. And that's what my early sobriety looked like. There was a in the area I got sober in Los Angeles, California, there was a loving fellowship, actually, and people would gather around you and tell you what to do. And one of the first things I was taught to do after you know, attending meetings was to get a book, Alcoholics Anonymous, some people call it the Big Book, and read it. It was a great sleep aid. I read it and it would knock me out to sleep. It was poorly written. It went on and on, and it did the trick, but I must have been absorbing some of the ideas of it. And one of the ideas that appealed to me the most was on page 60, where it started talking about I may be trying to run the whole show, and that could be my character defect that always makes me uncomfortable and have the need to alter myself from the neck up. And that seemed to, you know, that my problems were of my own making, whether I realize it or not. And the people were really reacting to my behavior, not my intentions. And that could have a lot to do with recovery. And I think that made sense to me. They also taught me in the Los Angeles area in my early recovery to be of service, and be of service looked ridiculous to me. I was supposed to be cleaning ashtrays and coffee cups. We had coffee cups back then, and yes, people smoked in meetings back then. And most of the meetings now are non-smoking, and they do not use regular coffee cups. So, I got sober 12/8/1988, for those of you that care about the statistics. And I stayed sober and clean from that date to this day. I met a man, I somehow got railroaded into general service, and I met a man who had started a meeting called We Agnostics. And that appealed to me a great deal, because I couldn't fathom the idea of some kind of anthropomorphic deity swooping down and having gotten me sober. That seemed rudimentary and childish, actually, to me. And I'm sorry if that offends anyone who may be a believer here. I thought it was kind of magical thinking. I don't think that's what took place to this day. But so I started working the steps with Charlie Polachek. I can also say his full name, because he's now in the unseen world. So I worked the steps with him. I asked him about 2, 3, and 11, and he said, "I'll forget about that. Just do the steps, do the inventory, be the best you can be about being honest and fearless and thorough. And so I did just that. I was honest and fearless and thorough. I was able to see how my motivations and my behavior did in fact match up with what I read in page 60 to 63. The idea of the second and 12th and third steps started to make sense, that maybe I could turn my will and my life over to the care of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole and the healing power here. Since that has changed, I kind of see there's an inner portal to most living beings, and our ability to be compassionate and help others is kind of what I see as our higher power, this energy that runs through all living things, every tree, every rock, every molecule seems to be interconnected in this total energy of the universe. And I believe this total energy of the universe is a good energy. It is not something that likes destruction. Although atrophy is a law of the universe, so too is living and breathing and birth. And they're the yin and yang of the universe. And I'm not going to get too much into what I believe. Again, I think a person's belief system is personal to them, and how they come to their belief system is personal, and is sacrosanct. It should be not discussed in public, really. It just makes for debate, and debate is not really what we're here for. We're here for supporting each other in our recovery. And so Charlie helped me through the steps. Charlie's health was failing. He had moved to Texas to be near his sons, and so I started looking for another sponsor. I found one that I related to also. By that point, I was 8 years sober, and Israel became my sponsor, and he's still my sponsor today. And yes, I have a sponsor and I do work the steps. Again, I think that it's a personal experience. I think the sponsor is an ear, not a guide, and somewhat a guide, but only in the mechanics of it, not in the belief system. If a sponsor is involved in your belief system, you probably got the wrong sponsor. I believe that we have to find our own belief system, and much like Bill said in that statement, we have to be very careful about, judging other people's belief system, a pro or con, as far as this anthropomorphic deity goes. I think it's a personal belief system, and frankly, it's an outside issue to Alcoholics Anonymous, and Narcotics Anonymous, and Cocaine Anonymous, and Overeaters Anonymous, and whatever anonymous you want. The idea that we can tell somebody what they ought to believe and how they should believe is that's religion's work, and that's usually some kind of money-making scheme, in my opinion. But that's not what we're here for. We're here the glue that holds us together is our common suffering, and the glue that holds us together is our common solution. And that common solution is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I had gotten through all the first 9 steps, and I had started to make an honest amends for the behavior I had and the attitudes I had and the motivations I had, I started working I don't think that 10, 11, and 12 are maintenance steps. I think they're growth steps. They're a matter of, in step 10, all the first nine steps are enveloped in that. And step 11 is a deeper broadening of my belief system, whatever it may be, whatever your belief system may be, and however your prayer and meditation. Some people just, you know, do a walking meditation. Some people do gardening. There's lots of ways to apply the principles of the 11th step. And the 12th step is what I'm doing here, which I'm the most uncomfortable with. And that's speaking about what recovery means to me, what my sobriety means to me, because I'm not a public speaker. I'm not a circuit speaker. I'm not somebody who is an authority on anything. Whatever I share has been my personal opinion and my personal experience, and I don't reflect the views of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. And I'm not trying to tell you what to do. I'm trying to share with you what I did. And that's all I can do. And what I did and do to this day is try to step out of my way, my motivation to always be on top and always compete, and let recovery work in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and hopefully carry a message of recovery to them, bring to them rather than take away from them. But sometimes I need to do both. There are times where I'm in a place where I need to give from you experience, strength, and hope, as hopefully I can give to you. And that's really all I've got. That's my 20 minutes. And thank you for asking me to share.
Thank you.